Welcome to Multifamily Real Estate Investing, presented by Mara Poling. My name is Pat Poling. I'm the founder and CEO of Mara Poling. And I know I say I'm happy to be with you every week. I am really excited for this week's session. This week, we are going to talk about underwriting. And not just underwriting, but we're going to be talking about acquisition underwriting and annual underwriting. We are strong advocates for annual underwriting of assets that are already in a portfolio. We think it provides a great deal of value in keeping the strategy for those assets alive and timely. And there's a difference between how you do an annual underwrite and how you do an acquisition underwrite. And that's what we're going to talk about this week. As always, if you have questions, shoot me an email, pat@marapoling.com, marapoling.com. And a great big thank you to all of you that have registered for our underwriting webinar that's coming up on Thursday, the 18th, 11 a.m. out west, 1 central, 2 in the east. We just finished a session on retirement plan investing that's always a popular topic. And we had a wonderful turnout both at registration as well as attendees for that session. We'll actually be posting that session later this week to the Multifamily Real Estate channel at the Learning Center at marapoling.com. So you can check that out. But the registration so far for this underwriting session that we have coming up on the 18th is amazing. It is hands down the most popular session we have ever offered. We do have room. We have made adjustments to the platform that we use so that we've got enough seats for everybody. So if you would like to learn more about underwriting, and in particular, if you would like an underwriting tool to use from an educational standpoint, I have to describe it that way, then you want to register for this session. Not only will it be a great session, but we're going to send out some materials in advance of the session. And one of those items will be an underwriting tool that you'll be able to use to further your understanding of underwriting in the multifamily space, as well as just learning more about how to interpret financials when you see financials for an asset. So go to the Learning Center at marapoling.com, click on the webinar link, and you'll see all the webinars there that you can register for. We have a whole series for 2024. The next one that's coming up is underwriting, and that's on Thursday, April 18th. Okay, let's get into the meat of the session. What's an underwrite? Just a little bit of background for those of you that might be joining us for the first time or not having been involved with us terribly long. An underwrite is a forecast. It's simply a way to sit down and say, I'm going to buy this piece of property, and here's what I think it's going to do. I think we're going to have this much revenue. I think we're going to have this much in the way of expenses. I'm going to have a mortgage that's going to cost me this much. I'm going to maybe have some depreciation and some other things. So I can end up with a cash forecast and a growth forecast and a tax forecast. And I can put all sorts of great things together. And that can be done very simply. Really, I've seen back of the envelope underwrites. And you can have a very complex tool, as is the tool that we use at Mara Poling. When you put that underwrite together for an acquisition, you are taking information that you have about the asset you're looking at acquiring, information that the seller gives us, and you're also taking information from real-time sources, like we're getting insurance quotes and those sorts of things. We're getting a quote on our debt, what the interest rate will be, what do we think the loan proceeds will be, so we can calculate actually how much cash we'll need to put into the deal. And we'll have access to their information about what they've spent on expenses. And we'll have our own information about what we routinely spend on expenses at an asset. And in particular, if we're purchasing an asset in a market that we have experience in, we'll probably have some pretty good data about what it costs to operate an asset in that particular market. So lots of great data comes together for that acquisition underwrite. And then that not only gives us a forecast, but it also allows us to make a really big decision, which is the decision around what we pay for the asset, right? So an acquisition underwrite not only includes the plan for how are we going to operate in the future, but it drives ultimately the offer that we make, right? It helps us come to the conclusion of this is the target price we would like to pay, and here's a not to exceed number that if it gets above this, it just doesn't make any more sense and we're going to turn and walk away. Those are really valuable tools, and I'm pretty confident that every investor out there, every sponsor certainly uses it. Those of you that have built your own portfolios or are in the process of doing that, I'm sure you've done some kind of forecasting that gives you that sort of visibility in terms of an expectation. And those of you that are passive investors, the firms you've invested with have done an underwrite. And when they've given you what's often called a pro forma, which is, you know, it looks like a specific forecast of the financials, that's directly from the underwriting process. And again, that session that we're going to have on April 18th, we're going to go into underwriting in more detail and actually give you a tool to use that'll help you understand it even better. Well, so if that's an acquisition, what's this annual underwrite that I speak of? And this is something that I don't think is as common. I'd go as far as to say it's not very common. I think few people put an annual underwrite together. And I think there's some number of sponsors that do something like this, but not all sponsors do. We have done annual underwrites for quite a while. And what an annual underwrite is this, is we want to take a fresh look at an asset that we own and do so from the standpoint of here's an asset that we know much more about, right? We have much more intimate knowledge. We're not making guesstimates or estimates about certain line items, about operating expenses, or about rent growth, or about occupancy. We've got real data from how the asset's been performing. And that data, you know, the loan data, all the rest of it, allows us to have a much more solid footing in terms of what's the basis, where's the place we're starting, and allows us to put a forecast in terms of the plan for that asset that is what I would describe as real time. And here's what I mean by that. When we purchase an asset, let's say that we're working on an asset today that we're going to acquire. And for those of you that might be listening to this session sometime in the future, it's the early part of April in 2024, sitting here today. So we're working on an acquisition. We've got a property we're interested in. We have started putting an underwrite together. We might not make an offer for 30 days, might even be 60 days if it's going through a public process and the call for offers is down the road. Once we've made that offer, we then have to get the loan in place and complete our due diligence and then close. So working on something today, we might not close on it until June or July, something like that. It could even possibly slip out into August, right? And so over that period of time, we're working to keep that acquisition underwrite current. And then when we close the asset, we will lock that underwrite down. We'll say, okay, that's the acquisition underwrite. So we can compare back to it in terms of how we did. And immediately, let's say we close in July, I guarantee you, August, September, October, November, by the time you even get to the end of the year, the asset will be performing differently than how we underwrote it. And that's because any underwrite is a forecast. And if done correctly, what we would describe as correctly, meaning conservatively, there is room in there for line items, levers to underperform, to perform in have unfavorable variances. And there'll be some that will have favorable variances. There's room in there if you underwrite conservatively for the overall asset to continue to perform well in terms of NOI and cash and those sorts of things. And there'll be these variances that start to creep in. The further out we go, we get 6 months out, we get a year out, we get 2 years out, we get 3 years out from the acquisition, we can start to see an asset that in some instances looks very different than not only the asset we purchased, but what our plan was for that asset. And that can be because the asset itself could overperform or underperform in certain areas, as I just described. The other is, and I'd say this is equally as important, if not maybe even more important, is the market changes, right? As we go forward, we move through the economic cycle, whether we're on an upswing or a downswing. The local market will have changes that will go on to it. The competitive environment will change in terms of what nearby competing assets are doing in terms of investments and improving themselves and so on. And as those changes occur, looking at our performance and comparing it back to that acquisition underwrite, which is a valuable exercise, begins to have less and less meaning in terms of, well, what should I do today? In terms of steering the ship, it's not very helpful. So we have instituted and have done this for a while now, a process of annually underwriting all of our assets. And so an annual underwrite, we take the current performance of the asset. So I don't need to forecast what my expenses are going to be. And do that from the standpoint of, I know this is a forecast and they're going to be wrong. I can actually take the actual expenses I'm incurring right now for payroll and marketing expenses and repairs and maintenance and so on, and I can start using those. And that can be sort of the baseline that's in my model. I can then add to that, well, where am I today actually in terms of my rent growth? What have I done in terms of moving rents? What's left for me to do? What's my plan for how I'm going to do that? And my plan has probably changed. I may have started a property, an acquisition with an expectation that I was going to improve 80% of the units, and I was going to do that in 2 years. And I have actually, we've had a property exactly like what I'm describing to you. And as we got in to the asset, we found that we were earning that same premium that we were going to get by making improvements without really making any improvements to the units. So we deferred the improvements and we moved the asset forward in terms of growth and performance without having to put that capital in. All right, well, now we're to a place where, all right, so what do we do? Do we now go improve the 80% of the units? Do we not do that? Have we achieved enough that we could sell the asset with that much quote unquote meat on the bone? Lots of great questions. That annual underwrite helps me understand that. I'm not guessing about what my debt is going to be, unless it happened to be a floating rate loan, which currently we're not participating in loans like that. So I know with a degree of certainty what my loan situation is, what my debt service is, when I'm going to complete my interest-only period and move into amortization and so on. So there's a great deal more hard data that I can use. And then what I can do is I can go and look back at the acquisition underwrite. And I can say, all right, what was the plan? And by the plan, I don't really mean, improve this many units or, add valet trash or whatever. Obviously, those are part of the plan. But by plan, I mean, if our plan on that original acquisition was in 5 to 7 years, we wanted to exit and we wanted to exit with a return of 18% between cash and equity growth. Then I can look at where we are today, how much cash we've generated, how much equity growth we've already realized, And I can model out, well, where do I need to get? How much NOI growth do I need to have? Because ultimately, that's what really drives all of this. How much NOI growth do I need to have relative to what the capital might be that I invest in order to get to those targets? In some instances, that original 5 to 7 year target that I just used as an example, in some instances, we might be in a position where we'd be saying, yeah, we're going to be closer to the 7 year end of that. Some items have underperformed. There's been some changes in the marketplace. We're absolutely on a trajectory to get there, but it's going to be at the longer end of that original expectation. For others, it might be, hey, we're not only going to be there in 5 years, which could only be a few years away, it's possible that we're there right now. And we've had that happen with assets where after 2 or 3 years, we have achieved the goals that we set, and we now have sufficient lazy equity in the asset that we ought to have a conversation about what we do with it. And that's the next piece of the puzzle that comes. And that is based on all of that understanding, I can now put a plan together, an updated plan based on the real world data of where we are today, looking forward to, do I make improvements to units? Do I add some additional other income items? Are we to a point where I don't need to do that? We simply need to stabilize the asset after a period of significant revenue growth, stabilize it so that in a year we could affect some sort of liquidity event. A liquidity event being the sale of the asset or a sale exchange, selling the asset and executing a 1031. Possibly refinancing and taking cash out, or refinancing to get more favorable debt. You don't see a lot of that going on right now because most assets that are out there, ours included, have pretty favorable debt because they were, for us, they were acquired over a period of time when rates were quite reasonable. And they're still very reasonable today. Sixes are not bad numbers. They're higher than what we have at almost every asset. I think we have one asset that the current rate on it, which is fixed, is pretty much the same as what we would get if we went out and refinanced it. Everything else, we're really in an advantageous position. So I don't know that I'd do a straight refi, but if I had an asset that had a higher interest rate than what might be available, that might be something that we would look at. And from all of that, we can make a decision about, all right, this is what we're going to do for the next 12 months. And this is our plan at that 12-month mark in terms of what we're going to do. We can have those conversations and do all of that without doing an annual underwrite. An annual underwrite is not required to update your strategy, to evaluate what your options might be. We believe using a tool and using math so that we're as data-centric as we can be takes the gut feel, predetermined decision out of it. And what I mean by that is this, if you own your own properties, multiple, or if you're an investor in multiple passive investments, I think what I'm going to say will resonate with you. And that is, we all kind of have our favorites, not necessarily because of economic performance. That's certainly something that will contribute to it. But you know, there's properties we just like. Boy, that's a great asset. I really like that market. It's a nice asset. It's a good size. All sorts of things that aren't necessarily tied to, it's not only performed really well, but it still has a good runway in front of it, right? If we only look at the performance to date, actually, we could fall into a trap, right? We could be in a position where it's like, wow, this asset's done great. We should hang on to it. Well, what's the forecast for the future say? If the forecast for the future says we're in a flat period, or maybe even a declining period, then it might be more intelligent to do something with that asset now and move into something else. This annual underwriting process helps us take a significant amount of that out of play. Now, we're never going to take it all out of play because we're humans and there are still forecasting items in here, right? We're still in here forecasting. I think this is what we can do with rent over this period of time with this strategy. I think I can do this with occupancy and concessions and bad debt or other income. I think this is what our tax strategy will generate for us in terms of relief and support over the next X number of years. Those are all still forecasts, and we want to make them as data-centric as possible. And because there's humans involved in this, there's bias that's always going to creep in. So we want to guard against that everywhere that we can. Doing an annual underwrite is absolutely better than just sitting back and having a conversation about an asset where those biases are probably the thing that are really driving the conversation. So if you come join us on the 18th, and again, if you're listening to this 6 months from now and you're like, gosh, I missed it, well, then you'll be able to go find it on the Multifamily Real Estate Channel and watch the session. And if you just shoot me an email, I'll send you a copy of the materials. But for those of you that are listening in real time right now, early April, please go register for this event. Thursday, April 18th, 11 a.m. out west, 1 o'clock central, 2 in the east. If you register, whether you can attend or not, you'll get those advanced copies of the materials, which includes an underwriting tool, and you'll also get priority access to the recording. We record all of our sessions. Within a few days of the session, we'll have that recording complete and available to you so that you'll be able to watch it. And then a little over a week or so later is usually when they post up to the Multifamily Real Estate Channel so that everyone has access to it, but you get some priority access. So I encourage you to register. As I said, we've had a wonderful response. Thank you to all of you that are listening that have registered today. And please spread the word. If you know someone out there that's interested in learning more about multifamily or they're already a multifamily investor, I strongly encourage join this session. Great educational opportunity. Wonderful to learn, not just about underwriting. Underwriting's great, but understanding underwriting and that process, I think, helps everyone understand financials. So when you read a set of financials, you've got a little better understanding of what's under the hood. I would draw the analogy to, some automobiles have dashboards that have lights that will come on, right? A light next to a little picture of an oil can. Oh, I've got a problem with oil. Do I not have enough? Do I not have oil pressure? Is my oil temp too high? I don't know. I just know that I've got a problem, right? The financials might do something like that. Some cars have gauges, right? And you can see the oil temp and the oil pressure, and that really puts you in a position to know a lot more. Understanding underwriting allows you, when you look at financials, to kind of peek under the hood and see a little bit more to be able to understand what's really driving that current level of performance. So I hope you found this week's session valuable. Again, please go to marpolling.com, the Learning Center. Check out our webinars and register there. Check out the videos that are on the Multifamily Real Estate Channel. The retirement planning video or retirement account video will be up sometime this week. And there's lots of other great content for you there as well. So with that, thank you. And I look forward to seeing you again next week on another episode of Multifamily Real Estate Investing presented by Mara Poling.